Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is January 19th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to MotorVitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. In a moment, start the call off the way I always do, but had a couple interesting things that I saw come through on the news that I wanted to talk about first. The EWG, Environmental Working Group, just posted a link to a study that was kind of interesting. It talked about PFAS. And basically what they said is that there's evidence to suggest that eating fresh fish can one helping of fresh fish can give you, I think it's a 250 times the amount of recommended none of it's recommended, but the PFAS. It's like the fresh fish, our water supplies are so contaminated that it's actually getting into the fish supply and the fish are holding on to that. And I didn't read the entire report. I just sort of read the summary of it. And I just saw it this morning before the call, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Actually, I saw it last night on a Chiron on the news. It was just scrolling across the bottom of the page. So might be something worth taking a look at, just because your customers may see it, and it might be good for you to be aware that it's there. It seems to be making the headlines now. And in fact, as I was kind of looking into that, I saw that the EPA actually just put out a new interactive PFAS map. So if you go to the environment, the EPA's website, then you will find this interactive PFAS map. And that's actually on, and you know, the EPA has a ton of information about PFAS and PFOA. This is one of those things, as we've talked about, that will, will continue to become more and more and more prominent in our discussions out there with people. I mean, most people have heard the term PFAS now. And if you are not up on the latest and what it's, you know, what it actually does, then it might impact your ability to sound like an expert. So anybody else seen that study or heard anything about that? So, okay, with that, I am going to start the call off the way I normally do, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with?
Hey, Kelly. This is Scott from Alabama.
Hey, Scott from Alabama.
Hey. So in here, there's always been two communities that we've known about that have had PFAS in the water.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they caught up with their testing or it was because they lowered the threshold of the amount of PFAS that is allowed in the water. But The Alabama Department of Environmental Management a few months ago released a link that has basically a breakdown of what PFAS is. They have slideshows, they have videos, but they released a list of all of the communities in the state of Alabama that PFAS has been detected. And when I first got it, I thought, well, you know, there might be a couple other communities, but there are hundreds.
Yeah.
And the question is, how do you address that in a sales presentation without trying to scare the people that you're going out to see?
Yeah. I mean, that is the question, right? So because it's a legitimate issue, a couple things there. First off, there's not a federal standard on PFAS. They're working on it. They're working on action levels, and different states have sort of created their own limits and levels. PFAS is measured in parts per trillion, and if you do any research, you realize that It's the last, I mean, first off, there are over 12,000 different chemicals that fall into the PFAS or PFOA category. So PFAS is just a category of chemical. So, and the studies that I've seen, the information that I've seen says that you have to go all the way back to the Korean War before you find a blood sample. And this is where they found blood samples without PFAS in them. You have to go all the way back to the Korean War to find a clean blood sample that does not have PFAS in it. They've looked all over the world. And so these things are, they're out there. They're sort of ingrained in our society. And you know, it's not just the water that creates these things. I mean, in fact, when you test for it, so you know, Motor Vitality actually works with a lab to provide testing, PFAS testing. And when you send a bottle, a sample bottle for PFAS testing, you have to, the lab sends you three bottles. They send you two empty bottles and one bottle that has water in it. And the bottle that they send you from the lab that has water in it, they know has no PFAS. And so what you're supposed to do when you take the sample is, and they tell you exactly what clothes you can wear, the environment you have to be in when you take the sample, everything. But what you do is you open up one of these, one of the empty bottles, and you pour the water that they sent from the lab into that bottle, and you seal it, and you mark that as your control. And then you take the sample from the sink. And the reason they do that is because PFAS, like I said, you can have it on your hands, on your clothes, on, you know, and it's waterproofing. It's used in so many different chemicals. So to kind of answer your question, Scott, it's not just the water. It's kind of everywhere there. The second part of that answer is that the media is already doing a really good job of trying to scare the heck out of people with this stuff. So you don't have to. You can just say, you know, look, there's so much information about PFAS out there. I can give you some links to some very reputable sources to take a look if you want to gain more information about it. I can have that for you. What I can tell you is that at least for the water, we have the technology available to reduce PFAS. And so if you are concerned, and you know, that's not going to take care of PFAS everywhere in your life, but I can take care of it for the water supply. You know, so that.
So what we're doing is when we mentioned, you know, we talk about when we're talking about TDS, we talk about where different contaminants come from, and one of them is industry. And the way that I do it is that with industry, with these things called PFAS, and then I pause to see if I get a reaction, to see if they've heard anything. Yeah. Otherwise, I just go on with the presentation.
Yeah. Keep in mind, TDS is going to be a little different than PFAS. But PFAS is measured in parts per trillion and is going to be, if it registers at all, on any kind of a conductivity meter. You know, a TDS meter, all that's measuring is the electrical current that's in the water. It's not, and it's giving you, actually, that little TDS meter, it's measuring the conductivity, the amount of electricity that's traveled. You know, it shoots an electrical shock from one prong to the other prong and measures how fast that electricity travels. And based on that, the little microchip in there does a computation to estimate how many dissolved solids, or that's anything in the water that carries an electrical charge. And that number is in parts per million, right? So PFAS, things like PFAS or 1,4-dioxane, those types of things, those are in parts per trillion, which means that that's going to be a minute. I don't know that that would even have any impact on a number on the TDS meter at all. You know, a TDS, that means that if you had water with nothing else in it but PFAS, you know, and you stuck your TDS meter in there, it probably wouldn't read anything because it's such a small trace amount.
Reverse osmosis does take out PFAS, right?
It will, but keep in mind, again, the word you want to use is reduce, right? It will reduce PFAS because, you know, reverse osmosis is not a perfect, you know, when we talk about rejection rates, hopefully we see 95 to 98% rejection rate, you know, so we want to be careful when we use words like remove or, you know, take it out. I mean, yes, it will take it out, but it's not going to take it all out. It's not going to take all of every of anything else, probably. You know, it's going to reduce it. What I usually say is the goal is to reduce it to non-detectable levels. Okay, and that's what we want, right? Is to see we want to be able to say that it's down to non-detectable levels. Now, what does that mean? That means that probably we don't have testing, you know, sophisticated enough to test at the minute level. I mean, that's if the testing we have is not sophisticated enough to take it down to that level, probably we're okay. You know,
Kelly.
But okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Good morning,
well, that,
Paul.
That
how
helps.
You doing?
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Do you mind if I throw another 2 cents in?
Please, absolutely, Paul. Go ahead.
So my understanding on reverse osmosis is ability to deal with PFAS depends upon which compounds dealing with, since it's a category of thousands, and that some of them, many of them, are very well rejected by the membrane, but not all. Mm-hmm. And it's
right.
Not only the length of the chain, whether they're short chain or long chain, it's also the shape of the chain. So it's really a tricky one with PFAS as to how effective is RO going to be. And I'm still trying to get an answer on when you're dealing with RO, your typical point of use RO always incorporates carbon. And carbon is also a technique, an effective way to remove PFAS, certain types, right? So I'm still trying to get an answer on when they say, oh, yeah, this RO works well for PFAS, how much of it is the membrane, how much of it is the carbon? Because the carbon's going to get used up, right? The membrane eventually has to be replaced, but it's a whole different mechanism. So the membrane, in theory, the more you use the membrane, the better. With the carbon, the more you use the carbon, you're using up the capacity of the carbon. So there's a number of factors that play into PFAS, and I really think it's great that you emphasize reduce, because that is our real mentality is there is no such thing as zero. Sort of the new mantra, you know, so you just reduce it as best you can.
That's a great point, Paul. And what you find on the municipalities that are addressing the PFAS issue, that's what they're using. They're using carbon tanks. And I think it's my understanding that catalytic carbon does a better job of removing that even than regular GAC. PFAS is interesting because this is one of those things, even though it's been around, okay, we call this an emerging contaminant. It's been around for a really long time. I mean, 1970s, I guess, or 60s, you know, originally created for Teflon, you know, was probably the most common, most popular product. But it's used for fire foam and waterproofing and just tons and tons of different uses. Medical devices that usually, you know, they put something inside your body, usually as a Teflon coating, you know, so there are definitely, it's been around for a really, really long time. We have only the public, even though the people that produce this stuff were aware that there were potential health risks. The public has really only become aware of this in the last decade. In fact, it's really interesting. The first time I had an opportunity to go visit the legislators in Washington, D.C. as part of the Water Quality Association fly-in, hardly any of the legislators had ever heard of PFAS. The last time we were there in person, and I will tell you if you have an opportunity to go, it's coming up again in March, and I would absolutely encourage you to reach out and see what it takes to get there. It's an amazing experience, but we haven't been able to go in person the last couple of years because of, you know, the zombie apocalypse and stuff that happened a couple of years ago to the Capitol and security and all that good stuff. So this year will be the first year we're back on site on Capitol Hill, which is really exciting. But now when you talk, and it doesn't matter whether they have an R or a D after their name, now everybody is aware of PFAS. It is a bipartisan issue. And regardless of which state is there, they are looking at ways to address it. And our industry is a critical part of that. It's It's a lot more cost effective to treat these things at point of use than it is at a municipal plant. Just a lot. It makes a lot more sense. But anyway, I don't know if that answers your question, Scott. I hope that does.
Can I add a little bit?
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Okay. Go ahead.
Can I add
Jim?
Just a tap?
Yeah.
So this is something that when I first started in the industry, you know, one of the questions you would ask is how do you bring it up without using, without using scare tactics. When I first started in the industry, the arsenic was the emerging or was the big issue because they had lowered the levels. The EPA lowered the levels from 50 parts per billion to 10 parts per billion. So people who originally had 40 parts per billion, they're like, oh, my water's perfectly safe. I'm okay. Then all of a sudden they're freaking out because they lowered the limit and it's the same water they've been drinking for 30 years. Now it's unsafe and they don't want to drink it. Which, of course, nobody wants to drink water with arsenic in it. But, you know, we had to tread lightly. And there were a lot of companies that would go out there, and that was their sale because they, we have to sell on, you know, fear and everything else because that's what people buy on. And I would go in there, especially when I was working with realtors or even just regular homeowners, is I would go in and explain to them, listen, you know, I'm not a complete expert, but here are some resources that discuss this. The thing is, we have equipment that can take care of it for you. And I would give them resources. And like Kelly said, the news is doing a great job at putting the fear in everybody. I have a couple of YouTubes that I have that the news is just like, don't drink your water, you're all going to die. And same water we've been drinking all of our lives. So just going in and saying, you know what, I've learned a lot about this. It is an emerging contaminant. It's changing continuously as far as, you know, what they're finding. But this is the equipment that we have to offer to reduce it and explain to them that if somebody says that they're going to completely remove it, you're reducing it below detectable levels. But you know, I have no fear in telling somebody, if somebody claims that they're going to completely remove it, it's unfortunately a false claim.
Yeah. Yep. That's, yeah, exactly. And that's the case with any, you know, what we can give is peace of mind. Whether you have this in your water or not, it's nice to know, you know, you put in a system that is designed to reduce the things that you, whether you know about them or not, that you might be concerned with. It's peace of mind. You know, that's what's kind of nice. So, all right.
Kelly,
go ahead.
I think I'm going to see if we can get Marianne to come on and just give 25 minutes. Marianne Metzger, she's with ResinTech, and she is like the PFAS guru. We have quite a few of them within the industry, but she's probably my favorite go-to. And she will be speaking at the WQA convention. But I'm sure we can get her on for just 25 minutes, you know, to talk about PFAS.
Perfect. Okay. I think Marianne was on, but she talked mostly about testing a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So we've had her on as a guest. She's a great guest, so that would be a great idea. So we've got about 10 minutes left here, which is fine because this topic is the topic that I had today. Probably, I don't know if would necessarily take the entire time. So this is great. But maybe we can take a few minutes. So, you know, we are really excited that on Monday we have coming on site our first class to actually install. So many of you know that we've been building this training facility for installers, and we've been teaching the virtual classes already. Those have been going strong. But our first group is coming. We have a group coming in from Texas that is going to be learning how to install in our facility. So we're really super excited about that. And as we were putting things together, Of course, this some of you may or may not know, but the curriculum we're using actually qualifies them for WQA certification. So this will, after completing our course, they will be eligible to take the exam for the certified installer through WQA. That was a little advertisement and plug for those of you interested as well. but we're looking at putting together information in a packet, and one of the things that we're designing and putting together is just a completion certificate. I mean, it's a lot of information. You know, people are putting forth the thing, so we're putting together these really nice certificates of completion and achievement once they're through these courses. You know, once they complete the course. And it got me to wondering, I probably got 20 of these things of various, you know, certificates that I've taken, maybe even more that I've taken through the years, you know, classes that I've taken and you know, seminars I've gone to and courses that I've completed and those types of things. You know, I used to when I was in sales, I had a book that I would put them, you know, in a sheet protector, and it was a 3-ring binder, and I'd put that in with all the letters that customers had written to me, reference letters and recommendation letters and those types of things. And I used to use it. Now, because I'm not in sales, and a lot of times, you know, especially the last few years, I've kind of worked in a home office. I mean, we're still putting together the office here at this facility. I focus more on the training part of it than I have the actual office part. But I've got all these things in, some of them in frames, some of them just in a folder. And, you know, I'll probably end up hanging them up around here. But I was wondering, what do you guys do with your certificates when you get those things? How do you use them? What do you do with them? Does it matter? Do they mean anything to you? You know, what are your thoughts on a certificate that you get after completing a course? What how do you use them? Or do you really care? And go. Right.
Okay, so does anybody need to come to the Certified Installer training so you can get a certificate?
Yeah, if you don't have one, come here, complete our course.
You'll get one. So Kelly, this is an interesting conversation because I've taken a few courses. I'm CWS certified, Certified Water Specialist. I'm certified in that. And then also at my office, which I'm going to bring here because more people are going to visit, is we have the WQA membership. You know, we get a little certificate for that. But I've taken a couple of courses through different manufacturers. And I was looking at a few of them the other day, and I'm like, you know, I really should start displaying these because I worked my tail off for those things.
Yeah.
And I know it's a piece of paper and, you know, it has fancy lettering on it, but it has my name on it and it has what I worked really hard for. So I'm just going to go over to like the Dollar Tree, the dollar and a quarter tree, and I'm going to pick up, you know, some of those certificate frames. And I think I'm going to find a wall that in my office that I can start hanging them up. Like you said, you're not really, since we're not in the home anymore, but I used to use it when I was in the home, my CWS certificate.
How about anybody else? Did they, what do you guys think? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Do you use them? Do you have them?
Kelly, if I can chip in again, it's Paul.
Yeah, please.
Hey, I'm thinking about a related thing. When I go into an office like to see a doctor, if I have time, you know, you're waiting maybe in the waiting room or whatever, I definitely look at certifications that they have on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it means something, right? You look at it going, oh, he's not just a doctor, he's also board certified in blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it makes a difference to me. And if you have a retail store, one option is to frame them and put them up in the store so that if customers come in, they can see them. I like your idea. I did not do that, but I was not really what I would call a good salesperson in the sense of understanding any of the good techniques to employ. But what you just, and Jen, what you were saying of, hey, I have them in a book that I bring in to show a potential customer to demonstrate some of my commitment to the industry. I think that's great you did that.
So on my we can talk about the book that I had. That was actually the most powerful tool that I had in my test kit. It was a three-ring binder on the front of the book. I had printed, you know, you can slide it in the front. It said the sweetness of low price or the bitterness of poor quality lasts far longer than the sweetness of low price. And that's what I had on the front of the book. Even before they opened it up, that was the title of the book, and I handed that to them. And what I would use, the way I would usually use that, is I would, you know, I'd go through my presentation, and then I'd say, you know what? Of course, I've been sitting here for the last hour telling you how great I am, and how great our product is, and how great our company is, and of course I'm going to say that because I work here. Let me show you what some of my customers have said about us, and I would hand them this book. And in the book, the first part would have my certificates, you know, my certifications. You know, just different things that that I had accomplished. At the time, I only had, you know, three or four certifications or certificates in there. But then I had a ton of letters that, because I would actively ask for letters from customers, always asking for, you know, for a reference letter, a referral letter. So I had a book towards the end when I was right before I left sales. I had well over 50 letters and references. Now, part of that was I would use when I go do an in-person follow-up after, you know, after the couple weeks after the sale, there was always a little comment section that said, you know, anything you want to say about us, good or bad, please, you know, jot it down here. And they'd write down, great job, Kelly was excellent, service was incredible, installers did a great job, you know, whatever. And I'd make copies of those and put it in the pages too. So they would just flip through those. And then I also, at the end of that book, had a couple of those articles that I tried to cycle them through and make them more recent because they come all the time. So I would clip newspaper articles about, you know, I remember I had one, you know, there was an article on arsenic and there was one about the NTBE in the water. That was one of those things, you know, the gas additive that was leaching in. And that's what I would use that. And I would, because I worked in a specific territory in a very small town where everybody knew everybody, it was always interesting to see them flip through and go, oh, Fred put one in. Oh, Mike put one in. You know, they would see names that, you know, from the community that they recognized, and it was a tremendous sales tool. But the certificates that started with that, it added credibility. It showed that I wasn't just, you know, a guy that was, it showed that I actually knew a little bit about what I was talking about. Anybody else using it a different way? We got a couple minutes left here.
You know, one more recommendation that I have, Kelly, is if you post it somewhere on your website, or if you're certified, like certified water specialist, or on your LinkedIn profile or something, post it where other people see it. That was something recently we had a potential client that I didn't, unbeknownst to me, before they even gave me a call, they had thoroughly checked me out.
They had seen on
LinkedIn, you know, my certifications, and then they had somewhere along the lines, because they had, I think, Googled my name with my certification, they saw that, you know, I had spoke at WQA, and so I was fairly impressed, but a little bit creeped out when they told me, oh yeah, we see that you did this, and this, and I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah, had the same thing.
I forgot about that.
Exactly.
So definitely, you know, something to consider is putting it on your website.
All right. Any final comments on this topic or anything else?
Morning.
Excellent. Well, you guys, I very much appreciate you all hopping on, and I encourage everybody, if you're curious, by the way, about the training facility, please take a look at motorvitality.com or reach out to us. We can give you some information on that. And Otherwise, we will talk to you next week, if not before. So thanks, everybody. Be safe.